Excellent. Okay. So once again, good morning. It's wonderful to be a part of the program. I used to introduce speakers from time to time, so it's nice to be a speaker. I see some familiar faces. So thank you all for joining this morning, and thank you to my family who are all over the country and joining me. So the reason why I chose to speak about the topic of tzedakah is quite obvious. We are in a time where we know that doing mitzvot counts a lot. In particular, someone actually asked me, they're like, oh, now you're the director of alumni, which is out of the advancement office of Yeshiva University. Are you going to make a plug for people to give at the end of your shiur? I am not giving a plug. However, if anybody does want to invest in Yeshiva University, now's your opportunity. Just kidding. But the reason why I chose to talk about tzedakah is these last few months in particular have shown us that there are many people who may not have been in need initially, but now are finding themselves. Oh, I see that someone says my source sheet needs permission. Let me just change that. One second. Thank you. Anyone should be able to view. So let's see. Hopefully that fixed it. If not, I will share my screen a little bit later. Where'd you guys go? Okay, there we are. So we've seen now during Corona, unfortunately, many people have lost jobs, have fallen on times that are difficult, and even more so in our community, there is a time to give tzedakah. This is a time to give tzedakah. And though we know that we are about to begin, we're about to go into Rosh Hashanah, and we know that we read the Netana Tokef, and what are the three important words that happen at the end of the Netana Tokef? We read, Utshuva Tzvila Utzdaka Ma'avirin Et Roa HaGzeira, right? We know that asking, doing tshuva and davening and giving tzedakah are the way to change our decree, if God forbid we have a bad decree. So when I was looking into this, actually one of the interesting things that I came across was actually the root to the Netana Tokef. I'm not sure how many people actually know this story. Maybe you all know the story, but for those who don't, I will share the story of the history, so to speak, of the Netana Tokef. So there was a rabbi of Mayans who was a very wealthy and handsome and noble rabbi, and he was under a tremendous amount of pressure from the archbishop of his city to change his religion, to adopt Christianity and to leave his Judaism behind. And he repeatedly ignored this request, and he would do whatever he could to obviously say no. He wasn't going to give up his Judaism. And at one point he said, you know what? In an effort to throw him off, he said, give me 3 days to think about it. And afterwards, he was so heartbroken because he thought, oh my gosh, I thought here I was being so sneaky. I'll throw them off for 3 days, this and that. But in fact, he was like, I gave them an inkling that maybe I was considering converting and leaving my Yiddishkeit. So he was quite upset. And he did not want to convert. There was no chance of doing that. And he refused to eat. He refused to drink. He was davening. He was crying. It was very, very painful. And at the end of the 3 days, he was summoned by the archbishop and he had to come in front of him. And he initially ignored the summons, but he was dragged in. And when he was finally brought before the archbishop, he said, the archbishop said to him, why didn't you come to me? And he didn't know what to do with himself. He said, cut off my tongue. I lied to you. I promised you that I was going to think about it and change my mind after 3 days. Just cut off my tongue. And the archbishop said, no. He said, instead, I will cut off your legs because your legs did not bring you to me. And not only did he cut off his legs, he cut off his arms. And when this rabbi was brought back to his community, Rav Amnon, it was just days before Rosh Hashanah, and he was brought home with his limbs, as the story goes, and he was in his bed, dying of his wounds, and he requested to go to shul for Rosh Hashanah. And he was there with his body parts in shul, according to the story. And as the chazan was about to say Kedusha, Rav Amnon asked him to stop, and he said the words, "Uvechein ulecha ta'ale Kedusha," and he was praising Hashem. And he said that basically he used these words and he said, as I am ascending up, as I'm going up to heaven, as he knew he was about to die. And he said out the words. He then began reciting the Unetana Tokef. And he specifically said the words, Emek Yata Hu Dayan Umochiach, truth that you are judge and you are Hashem are the one who's going to ultimately make the decision, indicating his acceptance of Hashem's divine judgment. And with the words, V'tichtod Egzar Dinam, he was recorded, his decree was recorded and on Rosh Hashanah. So, and no sooner had he finished his davening, his tefillah, he died. And his, from that point, his whole congregation was introduced to the Netana Tokef, and that those words inspired the rest of the tefillah. And so going back to why, I think it's a very powerful story because we see that it concretized how the actions and our tefillot, or his specifically, were directly affected by his experience and therefore was turned into this tefillah. And we know that the end is, we believe, Hashem, you are the ultimate judge. You decree what our futures will be. And whatever it is, it is. But we have this opportunity to tshuva, tefillah, utzdaka, to be ma'avir et ra hagzeira, to change the evil decree. So we know this. We've grown up learning this. So I want to take a look. And for those of you who are able to access the source sheet, I'm very happy. And if you weren't, then I'm just going to go through it because I don't want to keep going between screens. So let's take a look at where the initial sources of caring for the poor come from, right? So initially in Vayikra, in Parak Chafhei, Pasuk Lamed Hei, we have Bechi Yamucha Achicha Umata Yado Imach Vehechazakta Bo Ger B'Tosha V'Chai Imach. If your fellow friend is poor, impoverished, and they come to be with you, you have to hold them and let them live with you, and you have to let them be by your side and take care of them. And then it continues the next pasuk, Al tikach meito neshach b'tarbit b'yereita melokecha b'chai achicha amcha. And it talks about if you give them a loan, do not take interest, fear Hashem, and let them live by your side as your friend. So in Vayikra, right, we have this commandment to take care of the poor person and to let them live with you if necessary. Obviously, then it goes into the concept of an Eved Ivri. So we know that that's one option. Then we have in Devarim, we have the other version of the commandment to care for the poor in our community. We have v'chi ki iye b'cha evyon me'achad achecha b'achad sharecha b'artzecha asher Hashem elokecha notein lach lo tameis et levavcha v'lo tikpos et yadcha me'achicha ha'evyon. If, however, there is a needy person among you, one of your community members, your friends, who lives in your area, in your community, that Hashem has given you in your neighborhood, so to speak, do not harden your hearts. Do not shut your hands to them. You have to be kind to that needy person. Next pasuk, ki patoch tiktach et yadcha lo va'aveita avitenu de machzero asher yachzar lo. Rather, you should open your hand and lend them sufficient money for whatever, or sufficiently for whatever it is that he needs. Next pasuk, Hishamer lecha peni yadavar im labav chablia lemor karva shnat hasheva, shnat hashmita v'ra'i necha b'achicha avyom v'lo titen lo v'kara elecha el Hashem v'yabecha chet. And of course, we're talking about in the Shemitah year that if this is the year, you are, if it's the Shemitah year, first of all, again, do not be mean to them, be kind to them, and you must, if you choose, sorry, I'm just looking at my different notes. If you are not kind to him, he will cry out to Hashem and you will incur the guilt. You have to be kind to him. That's what this obligation is. We don't have the opportunity to just turn our backs on them and to just say, forget it. I'm not interested in giving them. And I think it's challenging. There are times where we literally walk down the street. I don't know if anybody's been in Manhattan these last few months. It's very empty and there are many, many homeless people on the streets. And I know we're talking to people all over the country on the program, obviously. So those of you who are New York based, maybe you've been in Manhattan. It's an overwhelming sight to see that there are streets that literally just have shuttered businesses and just unfortunately tons of homeless people on the streets. So are we meant to give to every single person who we pass by? And we know, of course, now, certainly my mailbox is filled with envelope after envelope after envelope from every organization under the sun requesting tzedakah. And in this time in particular, because of Corona, not because of Corona, we would have gotten these envelopes anyways. What is our obligation to be giving to all of these different organizations and different people who are in need? So first of all, I just wanted to actually tell a quick story. A few years ago, I don't even remember where I was actually, but I was passing by and I saw a woman on the street who appeared poor, homeless, disheveled, I'm not sure. And it was right next to a hot dog cart. And I decided, I knew I couldn't really buy her a Treyf hot dog, but I said, let me at least get her a hot pretzel and a drink. And the guy asked me, the vendor said, oh, do you want mustard with it? Or I don't know what he was asking. And I said, well, do you actually recognize this woman? Have you ever given her food before? And he actually, once he realized that I was giving it to this woman, he said, oh, you know, take this. He gave me two pretzels, whatever. And then he actually said to me, are you Jewish? And it was before I was married, so I wasn't wearing a shaitel. Not that I necessarily thought he would know the difference between a shaitel or not, but my action stood out as, this is something that a Jewish person would do. Not to say non-Jewish people wouldn't give, but it was a real, real Kiddush Hashem, that in the slight action of just asking for a hot pretzel for this woman on the floor sitting asking for money, he saw that as a midah of a Jewish person, which I thought was very humbling, actually, and really inspiring to recognize that it could lead off a chain reaction and other people may be inspired to get, which was really thoughtful and really something that left me with even more responsibility of what are my actions when I walk past somebody and I don't give them? Do people notice that more? And it really left something with me. So I want to skip down to the fourth source then. If we look at what it says in Bava Metzia, where Amud Aleph, where we see the prioritization of tzedakah. Again, I'm sure everyone is very familiar, and if not, we're going to review it now. How do we choose how to give our tzedakah, especially when we're getting so many envelopes and so many people requesting tzedakah from us? Okay, so let's go into that source. Icha dimtani la laha derav huna, aha ditani rav Yosef. Im kesef talua et ami et ani imcha, Imecha, Ami Vinahri Ami Kodem, Ani Vashir Ani Kodem, Ani Aniecha of Aniye Ircha, Aniecha Kodmin, Ani Aniye Ircha of Aniye Ir Acheret, Aniye Ircha Kodmin. Right? So the most important thing is, as you see, it's differentiating between different categories. So, first of all, it's differentiating between my people, meaning Jewish people, and strangers, non-Jewish people. Jewish people have a precedence. If it's a poor person and a rich one, obviously the poor person has the precedence. If it's a poor person and the poor person of your city, your person, which really means your family member, that's what it means by your person, has precedence. And if it's the poor of your city versus the poor of another city, your city has precedence, right? So that we know to be something that's been well known. And then we have in the Mishnah Torah, also Rambam also highlights again the same kind of differentiation, just to reiterate what he says. Mitzvah asay letein tzedaka la'aniyim kifi ma shera'ui la'ani. Im haita yad hanotein masaget, shene'emar patochti tach et yadcha lo, v'ne'emar v'chazakta bo ger v'tosha v'cha imach, v'ne'emar v'che achicha imach. So again, he's actually quoting the Psukim in Devarim, which we already read. So again, he's saying it's a positive mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to say, to give tzedakah to the poor, according to what is fitting for the poor person. And he again describes, you know, if someone is in your city, if they are close to you, you have to open your hand, you have to give to them, don't close your hand to them. And then the next part, bet, v'chula ro'e ani mevakesh ve'elim inav mimenu v'lo natan lo tzedaka, avar v'lo ta'aseh sh'ne'amar, lo ta'ameitz et levavcha v'lo tikpos et yadcha me'achicha ha'edyon. Again, he's saying, anyone who sees a poor person and then averts their eyes, they look away from him, does not give him tzedaka, is actually over a mitzvah lo ta'aseh, that he's actually doing something negative. And he quotes again the pasuk from Devarim about if there's a needy person amongst you, you should not harden your heart to them. So again, thinking about what does it mean when I turn my head away from someone who's asking me, or what does it mean if I rip up the envelopes that I received? And I'm not telling anybody what they have to or can't or should or shouldn't do. I'm just putting out all the sources, so no judgment here. And so let's go on then to. Well, actually, I want to tell another story. I like to tell stories, so bear with me, that relates to this. I many, many years ago, actually, after the tremendous hurricane in New Orleans. I'm sure everybody remembers it. Many thousands and thousands of people evacuated from, they evacuated to many places, but they went from New Orleans to Houston. And I was actually very fortunate to be a part of a delegation from Yeshiva University of three people who went to Houston to aid with the volunteer efforts, because there were so many volunteers, they needed people to actually take charge of the volunteers and to give out jobs and things like that. So one of the things that we did when we initially got there was many people who were affected by Hurricane Katrina had been put in temporary housing in the Astrodome, in a huge stadium, living on cots, thousands and thousands of people. So we went on a tour and we saw that literally anything that anybody had was literally the bag that they had sitting on their cot. They left and they didn't know what they would find, if anything, when they went back. So we went through the Astrodome. We saw what we were going to have to do when we volunteered there. And then they took us to the Houston Food Bank, which on a normal, regular week is already a very impressive operation, giving out tons and tons of food on a weekly basis. But what was fascinating when we drove up to the food bank were these signs that said, no more deliveries, no more donations. What had happened was people, out of the kindness of their heart, were truly doing whatever they could. They were buying food. They were dropping it off. And we saw there were like crates. If you've ever seen the supermarket, when the delivery person comes in with like the bread, it's in that tall thing and they push it. There was bread sitting outside the fence that was molding. Like, people just kept bringing stuff and it wasn't even, they didn't have enough help to give it out. So there was all this food, which was so wonderful, but it wasn't what was needed at that time because they just didn't have the capacity to give it out. So that also sat with me of giving what was needed and when it was needed. So again, if somebody comes to us in the height of the summer, and yes, they're poor, and all we have to give them is a winter coat, at this time, it might not be helpful. Yes, it could be helpful in the winter, but what they need now is very different, perhaps. And we have to think about that also. Or when we're giving someone even food. I still remember I was a high schooler, and I had gone to the city with friends. And I guess we had candy with us or something. I just have this memory of a homeless person on the street, and we took out these candies and he said, I don't have any teeth. And it was like, oh my gosh, you know, here I was thinking I'm such a good person. I'm giving him some nosh, whatever, just to sustain him a little bit. And he didn't even have the teeth. So what did he need? He needed soup. He needed something soft. I don't know. And at first I was like, so taken aback. And then again, I was reminded, this is what he needs. This is what it says. It's giving somebody what they need, not what I want to give, which is a very important message as well. And obviously a lot of people just need money and then they're able to do with it what they need. But when you're not just giving out money, it's important to think of what does that actually mean? So let's go back into the sources for a second. Going to source number 6, Yoredeya. Altihi ragil binidarim, kol hanoder af al pi shemekaimo nikra rasha v'nikra chote. Tzarich lezaher shelo yizor shum davar v'afil tzedaka ein tov lador. Ela im yashno biyado yitein miyad im lav lo yidor ad sheyeh lo. V'im poskim tzedaka v'tzarich lipsok imahem yomar v'lo neder. So this is interesting. The Shulchan Aruch is talking about not making nidarim, not making vows and swears. And in general, it's saying, you know, don't be accustomed to making a swear, a promise that you can't keep. We know also coming up, we say hatar nidarim. So it says, even one should be careful. It's talking in Sif Dalet, it says, Sarich lizaher shelo yizor shum davar, lo yidor shum davar, afil tzedaka in tovador. Even when it comes to tzedaka, do not make a neder that you are going to give tzedaka. Because if you do not come through on that, it's the same level of breaking any other neder, of breaking any other promise. So even if one does distribute, they should say b'li neder when they're giving out that tzedakah, that I'm not committing to anything on a regular basis or anything like that. Which again seems very, you know, important. And we think, you know, oh, I'm going to give, but then we don't deliver on that. So again, also the different iterations that tzedakah is not just about giving out a dollar. Let's go on to the next source, number 7, the Mishneh Torah and the Rambam. So we have mitzvah asei letein tzedakah la'aniyim kfi masher oi la'ani. Im hayta yad hanotein maseget shne'emar. Again, this is quoting in Devarim. So again, we're talking about it being a positive mitzvah to give tzedakah and that you should take care of those who need. And the number eight in source eight, Ba he'ani v'sha'al dei machzaro ve'im yad ha'notein maseget notein lo kfi hasagat yado. V'kama ad chamishina chasav mitzvah min ha'muvchar. Ve'echad me'asara v'nachzav v'inoni pechot mikan ayin ayin ra'ah. V'lolam lo yimna atzmo mashlishit ha'shekel b'shana. V'chol ha'notein pechot mizeh lo kayem mitzvah. V'afilu ani ha'mitparnes min atzaka chayav liten tzaka le'acher. So when a poor person comes and asks for his needs to be met, and the giver does not have the financial capacity to give them, he should give according to his own financial capacity, right? We're not all bazillionaires. Maybe people on this call are billionaires. I have no idea. I am certainly not a billionaire. I cannot just give endless amounts of tzedakah. So what the Rambam is saying is, how much then should one give? So the most desirable way of performing this mitzvah is to give one-fifth of one's financial resources, right? So we know that you're supposed to give 10% of what you make, but at least give a fifth if you can. And the giving a tenth is what's expected, but if you can't, you can give a fifth. And if you give less than that, a person should just at least refrain from giving less than a third of a shekel a year. So we don't know exactly what that amount is per se, but it's a small amount. And a person who gives less than that has not actually fulfilled their mitzvah. Obviously, if one has no money to give, then it's a different situation. But it does specify that even an ani, a poor person, has to give tzedakah on the tzedakah that they are receiving. So there is a level of even a poor person giving tzedakah, paying it forward, etc. I remember once seeing a YouTube video, I don't know if anybody else saw this, where it was one of those like hidden camera ones where someone went up to somebody on the street and he pretended he was poor and he was saying how he was so downtrodden, this and that, and he said it to a homeless person. And the homeless person said, hang on a second. And he ran inside. There was a gas station or something. And he went into the convenience store and it came out with some food. And he said, listen, man, I don't have a lot, but I can at least give you something. And this guy, who obviously wasn't really poor, was so blown away that this real poor person gave him money that he obviously then turned around and said, there's a surprise camera, this and that. He gave him money, this and that. And he was just so moved that a poor person was not just being selfish and thinking about himself, but in fact was giving someone else who he thought had it even worse than he had it, which I found also very, very moving. And I want to think about what in our community exists like that, and how can we each be involved in paying it forward or giving additional tzedakah like that. So first of all, I'm sure we're all familiar with Tomchei Shabbos. Tomchei Shabbos is an incredible organization. Now, thank God, there are many organizations out there like that. Many communities have soup kitchens, and we have a Masbia in Brooklyn, which has actual, it looks like a restaurant, and a poor person can walk in and feel like a mensch going in and having a meal. They also get food packages, etc. And sharing with them, many, many strangers that I don't know here on the call. When I was growing up, unfortunately, our family went through some very difficult financial times. And to ensure that we had food on our table, my mother arranged for us to receive Tomchei Shabbos. And I still remember that feeling of waking up the next morning with boxes outside of our door of food that we would never be able to afford. And the generosity and the level of tzniut that followed to make sure that the recipients, us, never knew who was giving us the Tomchei Shabbos, and the Tomchei Shabbos person who was making that delivery didn't know who they were giving to. You were never delivering in your neighborhood. I know today my brother, he also pay it forward because he also obviously benefited from it. He now delivers Tomchei Shabbos in a community outside of his own, and it's something that he's really stuck with him to always be involved in this kind of mitzvah because of the impact it had on us and our family. And I think, you know, if someone maybe can't give to Tomchei Shabbos, but they have the time to volunteer to donate on behalf of Tomchei Shabbos to do those runs, it's also a very, very moving experience to be involved in that. Let's keep going. Source 9, and I apologize, I see that I'm talking very quickly, which I have a habit of doing. So I'll try and slow it down a little bit. So source 9, we have Mefarsin, also in the Mishnah Torah, Mefarsin u'machisin aniye akum im aniye Yisrael mitnei darchei shalom. Va'ani ha-mechazer ala petachim ein zakkin lo matana So we also have the commandment that we are not just giving to Jewish people, right? We provide food and sustenance for non-Jewish people alongside the Jewish people as an expression of Darchei Shalom. We want to ensure that there's peace between us. And if a poor person comes door to door, if they come to our house to knock on our door, we do not have to give him a large gift, but instead we should give him something small. You don't have to give him $1,000 or $100. You can literally give him $5. That is okay. But it's prohibited to turn that poor person away. We can't just say, you came to my door, it bothers me, get out of here. And it says specifically, here it talks about even fruit, giving them, that even if you give them a single date, the fruit, as it says, you should not turn down and humiliate the poor. So I think in terms of making a Kiddush Hashem and doing it Darchei Shalom, I'm sure many people in their communities saw, at certainly the beginning of the pandemic, there was an effort to take care of first responders, right? And frontliners, the doctors, et cetera. So in my community, I live in Riverdale, and we were one of the first communities to shut down when the pandemic began. We all know it started nearby in New Rochelle. And because of the local day schools and the shuls, we were of the first communities to shut down to ensure safety. And because it was over Purim, we actually only had Megillah reading. We had no programming, and we already had a number of families who were in quarantine because their kids were in a local day school. I was in charge of ordering pizza for a pizza party for Purim. So I'd ordered 30 pies from the local pizza store. And when things were looking obviously a little bit more clouded and we didn't know what was going on, we didn't know if we'd be open again in a week or not, we said, okay, it's not safe to have a kid's party. Let's still keep the pizza. And instead, we're going to deliver it to people's homes. So we called this the Pizza Brigade. We didn't have capes, although our rabbi was dressed up because it was Purim. And we went and delivered pizza to 30 families who were in quarantine already for, I guess, close to a week, because Purim was about a week after the first case was diagnosed. And it was unbelievable to see how those families responded. They felt so cared for. They felt so loved and supported. These kids were losing their minds. They had never been in their house for so many days, and not been allowed to see any friends or go out. This was before Zoom took off. We didn't know what was going on. We didn't even know the word social distancing or that we had to wear masks. We just said, let's get pies and pizza to them. Let's do this for these kids. And then fast forward another week, we did it 3 weeks in a row for our community. Every Sunday, we dropped off pies and pizza. At this point, we were now learning more and more about what was going on, and more and more people were going into quarantine. So after we had given out pizza for 3 weeks, we decided the last week before Pesach, we were going to give as many pies as we could fundraise for to the doctors of Montefiore Hospital. And it was really, to me, we did it because we care, but it was also an opportunity like this, Mipnei Darchei Shalom. It made such a Kiddush Hashem. It really showed that the Jewish community was not just, using the hospitals because they needed them, but in fact, we really cared about the doctors and the nurses and the frontliners who were taking care of us. And not only did our purchasing all this pizza and then delivering it to the hospitals, have an impact on those who are receiving the pizza, but even the pizza store, right, whose business had gone down the tubes in overnight. He was so reliant on foot traffic and people ordering and schools that he had, regular orders for. Everything was done. And the biggest orders he was getting now was when we would order 25, 30 pies to go to a hospital. And it was just this incredible, multifaceted level of giving that affected those who were receiving, those who were delivering, and of course the small business owner who was benefiting from our purchasing these pies. And it just really left an impression on everybody who was involved. And we were very fortunate that people were so inspired to keep giving to those in need, either families who were struggling or families who emotionally were struggling, that every time we put out like a cold call, we just said, can anybody sponsor pies? We would have enough money to buy 30 pies within an hour. And it was actually very cute. A student of mine was very inspired by the pizza deliveries that we were doing. And she reached out to me and said, Mrs. Koenig, when I was in the high school, I went by Mrs. Koenig. I used to work at Central. Now I'm back at YU. So I go by Abrams Koenig because people know me that way. But that's a little fun fact. Anyways. The student had reached out to me and she said, Mrs. Koenig, I am so moved by the pizza deliveries. For my birthday, I would love to donate pizza. And I said, great. How much money would you like to spend? How many pies would you like to deliver? So she said, how much is a pie? And I said, $20. She goes, okay, two pies. And how can I go to a hospital with two pies of pizza when there's dozens of people working in the emergency rooms and on each floor? So I sent out a WhatsApp message to our shul community. And within an hour and a half, we had 30 pies donated. And what was so timely was that that day or the next day, I think when we were supposed to be delivering the pies, there was an article that had come out that another hospital locally, the Allen Hospital, which is a part of the Columbia Hospitals here up in Washington Heights, one of their ER doctors unfortunately committed suicide. She was very affected by what was going on around her, and unfortunately she took her life. And her whole staff was so hurt and hurting and traumatized by what they had experienced, the least we could do was bring them pizza. And they really were so moved that this shul in Riverdale that, you know, none of them were a part of had dropped off these pies. It was a virtual hug in the form of pizza. Obviously it didn't, you know, make everything all better, but it was a little bit of an impact that made people feel a little bit better. So I think, again, all of these little steps, everything we do can make people just, it could just go a long way. So I actually think I want to go to source 11. We're going to skip number 10 because it's the Daf Yomi for tomorrow. And I think it's very timely for what we're talking about right here. So it's tomorrow. So we're in Reuven right now. And if you look on Daf Chavtet Amud Aleph, it says, Metivi Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Uchla Tablin Velitra Yarak Vasara Egozin, Vechamisha Afar Stikin, Ushne Rimonin Betrogecha, Vamar, Gorsak, Bar de Re Mishmeya, de Rav Menshaya, Bar Shigula Sugugli, Mishme de Rav, Vachin Leiruv, Vihine, Vahane, Nami Liu Ki Afar Stikin. So the Gemara is actually talking, obviously it's talking about Eruvin and stuff like that, but it's actually talking about when giving out maser to a poor person, it's differentiating between what you're giving out, how much you have to give. So it's specifically saying here, if a poor person is receiving spices or vegetables or nuts or peaches, or it differentiates how many you have to give. So it gives, you have to give five peaches, but you only have to give two pomegranates and one citron fruit. And it differentiates between these different types of fruit because some of them are more, you know, special or not necessarily expensive, but just are viewed differently. And it also even differentiates between an apple and a peach. So which goes to the question we were talking, or the thought that I was just talking about, is when you give food as opposed to giving money. So there is, first of all, if someone can't actually give money, but they can instead make a meal for somebody, or they can give food to somebody, that is a level of tzedakah that is recognized by halacha as totally a wonderful way to give. And it's an important way to give. And I think it's interesting that it's not just, okay, so just give them a peach, but it differentiates how many peaches in halacha should be given, which is also very interesting. And then the next line, hani chashivi v'hani v'hane la chashivi, is just saying again that there is significance and importance to different fruits, and you know that apples are less important than peaches, etc. And we see that even in the store when we go to buy them, what's more expensive? So we think about it. You can think about it in the context of that. And then the last source that I want to just think about and read through is from Mesudas David on Kohelet. And if we read it, Yadati, v'ani hine hiskalti ladat darchei ha'olam v'tulotav, v'hein yadati she'im tov v'meushar b'vnei adam. Ki im mi shedarko lismach lasot tov chesed v'tzaka v'od shehu chai. And he's saying, I know because I've studied the way of the world and what it is, what is beneficial, that there is no person that is better or more praiseworthy among people than one who is to be happy and to do good and kindness and tzedakah while he is alive. That these actions, being kind, being happy, but importantly giving tzedakah, are what makes a person feel fulfilled and happy throughout their life. And I think it's what we see in general, right? We're not just given these mitzvot just because we have to help people, but we also see the residual effects on us. We see the impact of our actions on us. We feel good about ourselves when we do something good. And I think that it's important when receiving a million envelopes in the mail at this time of the year, or in general, when people are reaching out to us for tzedakah, whether it be Yeshiva University or your local school or your local shul or somebody in your community, it's important to think about, what does this tzedakah mean to me? Because I think when we give to a charity that we feel close to, when we know someone who's benefited from a specific, you know, charity because they give towards a specific cause, people feel a closeness and they feel better about the impact of their donation. And I think that now in particular, we've seen, like I said, so, and we all know, so many needs and causes in our community due to Corona. But the truth is, these existed all before Corona. It's just been highlighted because people are in need now during Corona. And if we are not able to give to 50 organizations, but we can give to one organization, so we think about Aniyei Ir HaKodmim, our families even before that, we have to give in the right priority. But I think that when we really connect with what we are giving to, we feel better about ourselves. So one last vignette that I want to share that goes back again to my time in Houston. Actually, I have two stories that I'm going to share because I think that they'll leave us with a really sweet message. When we were in Houston going through everything, one of the opportunities that I had was there had been a huge shipment from LA to the people of New Orleans who were residing in Houston. People had donating tons of clothing and supplies and this and that. And it was coming via UPS. It was being shipped, I guess, and then they needed UPS drivers to pick up the big trucks, the loads, at the airport. And they had put out, I don't know how it works, but they reached out to their drivers, and there was actually a driver who was from New Orleans who had relocated to Houston because of the storm. And he heard this and he said, listen, I have a roof over my head now. I can go help out. So he went, and he himself, he didn't really have anything much for his family, but he had some sort of temporary housing. And when the UJA that I was working with of Houston, the Federation, heard what he had done for the community by bringing all this stuff in, they decided they were adopting this family. And then it became my responsibility to actually specifically help this family. It was really an incredible thing. And we got him, you know, clothing for his wife and his children and food. And I think they were in an empty apartment that didn't even have a refrigerator. So we managed to get them a refrigerator, and on and on and on. And I just said to him, like, you have so much to focus on right now with your family. Why are you doing this for other people? And he just kept saying, because I'm okay. I have my life. I have my family. I'm okay. And he kept joking that the funniest thing was his wife was actually named Katrina. So if anything, he felt even more of a connection to the storm, and he felt he had to help other people, which was really also quite moving. And in general, I think that when we are faced with challenges personally, and someone helps us in a modest way that feels good, that also goes a very long way. And we know that the Rambam also says that one of the greatest ways to give tzedakah is to help somebody with a job and to enable them to actually be independent, to not rely on our handouts. And I think now is also a time when many people are looking for jobs, and we might not be paying attention. Maybe we're done working, we're retired, this and that, or we don't need to worry about our jobs. But there are lots of people out there who could probably be connected, and maybe that's something that we could be doing right now. We don't have the capacity to give, but we heard from one person that they're looking to hire, and another person is looking for a job, and we can make that shidduch. We can make that connection and enable those people to, that person to find a new job. And I'm hopeful that, number one, this will be behind us soon, that Corona will end and we will all go back to a normal level of lifestyle, and that all of our tefillot, all of our actions, our tshuva, our tefillah, our tzedakah will in fact merit us to have a far better year next year, that all of us will be blessed with health, with parnasa, with all of the wonderful things that Hashem has in store for us, that we will in fact have the decree of only goodness, and that b'mehera b'yameinu will have Mashiach, and will not have these types of hard times again. And in fact, the next time we talk about tzedakah, we're talking about when we bring our karbanot and the tzedakah that is involved with those types of mitzvot. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thanks for joining me this morning, and I wish everyone a ktiva v'chatima tovah.